John Underwood, Wesley DeLonge, Jerry Jackson's over there. What's up? Okay. Jesus in the driver's seat. Isn't he always?
Jesus, take the wheel.
You know, Jesus, I've been talking you up lately. Like, I'm onto this thing with, like, you know, I'm back to the Steven Spielberg of the internet. Okay? First ever internet TV director. Okay? You know, we used to say that when we were kidding around, like, it's probably not true. We're just kidding, right? Now, I think it actually is true. Yeah, go ahead. You name me an internet TV director that's been around longer. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. I dare you. You're not going to be able to.
I don't know if I could name another one. I mean, technically, Jacori, I guess, and okay. Irma. Irma does too.
I'm not saying anything except for the fact that Jesus Godoy, legendary, first ever, and Steven Spielberg internet TV director. Okay.
He did it before Steven Spielberg did.
Yep. Mm. Okay, so we've got a lot of drama in today's show, of course. We're going to analyze Donald Trump's speech. I thought for what it was pretty good. Heads exploding. But, of course, riddled with lies. And so we'll explain that and false promises, or what I'm calling his promiscuity.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yes, come on, wait a minute. It's not that bad.
We'll have to talk about that.
Okay. Anyways, so that's coming up in a little bit. Actually, the rules on the EPA are interesting, slightly devastating, and I'm probably underplaying it by saying slightly. And the Republicans have to go on the record. That story I promised you about amazing stats from Venezuela, and then Uber is in trouble as usual. I might defend the Republican CEO. There's a lot of drums in today's show.
A study linked a particular behavior to female infidelity. How can you figure it out? Find out in the second hour.
Jeff, stay right here, guys. Plus, sharing is caring. Go ahead and share this stream wherever you are. Okay, so let me get started. I got the first story. John, take it easy. I got the first story.
Okay, I'm just going to be over here for
now. All right, okay. So, yesterday there was a special election in Connecticut. I told you all about this, and we got you all pumped up, and you know what happened? 500 volunteers went into the 32nd district of Connecticut for that state Senate run. If the Democrats won that seat, the entire Senate would go back to being blue. It was currently tied, and the Democratic candidate there was Greg Cava, and it was Wolfpack running the election against him because the Republican running against Cava had voted against Wolfpack's free and fair elections resolution. That was a mistake. So now, let me give you the context. Last time there was an election before the special one, it was just a couple months ago, November 8, 2016. Cava had not won that one. He had lost that one significantly to the Republicans, 68-32. Robert Kane went to go take another seat, but this is a heavily, heavily Republican district, so another Republican was up against Cava this time. So that's a 36-point walloping that Cava had gotten last time. And I told you, Cava, we got to have her. And you know what happened? We didn't have her. Okay, we didn't win. But let me show you the result from last night. All of a sudden, 55-45. Mm. That's a 10-point loss. That is a whopping 26-point difference in just 4 months. Now, what has happened in those 4 months? Well, only two things have happened. One, of course, Trump got elected, and a lot of people are excited about that. And it has made a difference in other races, state races across the country.
Yeah.
Now, it has not made a 26-point difference in any of those races. The second thing that happened was that Wolfpack went in. Uh-huh. And so in this case, 500 volunteers in one district.
That's amazing.
Okay, it is.
Are there 500 people in that district? I don't know.
There are. Voter turnout was, of course, much larger. I'll get to that in a second. And then we did spend some money there, and so some of our opponents started crying about that. And they're like, oh, but you guys say you want to get money out of politics, but you're spending money in this race. That's right. You know, there's a great way to stop us, get money out of politics.
Oh.
So I would suggest next time, if you're considering voting against Wolfpack's free and fair elections resolution, you think about a couple of things. If you like money in politics, be careful what you wish for. Mm-hmm. And secondly, are you sure you've got a 26-point lead in your district? Because apparently we can swing about 26 points in the most Republican district there was in that state. Yeah. In fact, now let me go to the experts and show you. First of all, the DNC is already crowing about this race. You're welcome, by the way, for making it this close. Tom Perez, the new DNC chair, says Democrats also came within approximately 1,800 votes of flipping the most Republican Senate district in the entire state, showing that even Republicans running in GOP strongholds aren't safe from the shadow of Trump. Now, of course, he's phrasing it like it's a Trump issue, and partly it is, but I would argue mainly it's a Wolfpack issue because that district the Democrat performed far, far, far better than even in other special elections that are happening right now in that state and others. And the most Republican, and this is now the Connecticut Mirror, local papers, all of them recognizing it, they say in the most Republican Senate district in the state, Cava lost by 10 percentage points, which Democrats say is their best showing there in decades. I have more on that in a second because it's actually a little longer than decades. So now we go to national news. Right. We go to national news, Huffington Post. While President Donald Trump was delivering his first address to a joint session of Congress on Tuesday, Democrats got the highest vote percentage they have ever received in the most Republican state Senate district in Connecticut. Democrat Greg Cava lost the election, but it was another small sign of improving electoral conditions for Democrats. Especially if Wolfpack's involved. Okay, now, Wolfpack, by the way, is not...
I love that they all give you credit there all of those sources.
No, they actually did.
Oh, they did?
I'm leaving that out.
Okay, good.
But you can read the Connecticut Mirror, they mention Wolfpack. They're like, oh, Wolfpack came, that was interesting, right? Huffington Post mentions Wolfpack. The Hartford Courant mentioned Wolfpack several times. They noted our intended irony of our spending in that race. So everybody knows that was us,
yeah.
Okay? So now, let me give you further context, because I love this story. Not only have Republicans held a seat for a century, but Cava received the highest percentage of any Democrat in recent memory. I want to go back to Wolfpack being nonpartisan. Now, this happened to be a Democrat against a Republican, but sometimes Democrats vote against our resolution. I would counsel against it. Okay. If you are not sure if we're really nonpartisan, go ahead and test us and see how that turns out. But make sure you've got at least a 26-point lead in your district. Okay, so we don't care if it's Republican or Democrat in the context of Wolfpack. If you vote for free and fair elections and get money out of politics, we love you. God bless. Go forward. Okay.
Yeah.
If you vote against it, we don't care what's next to your name, and we will come for you. And if you like money in politics, we'll give you money in politics and we'll throw in 500 volunteers on top.
Yeah, I mean, ideally we'd prefer that they vote idealistically because it represents what they really believe, that they want to get money out of politics. But I would personally be willing to take pragmatism. Get money out of politics to save your ass in your job.
All right, a couple of last quotes here. We go to Carolyn Fiddler, who's the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee Communications Director. She says...
Your title's too long.
I know, I agree. Early returns show the Democrat just barely lost... Senate District 32, literally the most Republican Senate district in the state. If true, the extreme level of Democratic over, and it was true, she wrote that earlier in the night, the extreme level of a Democratic overperformance in a district Republicans won 2-1 just last fall should terrify the GOP. This kind of Democratic strength will be the death of Republicans in the cycle in GOP-held seats that are even remotely competitive. Again, that comes with a giant, but it depends. It depends on which side Wolfpack's on.
Yeah, so, and who the candidates are,
yeah.
If they stand for the right things.
Exactly.
Do they deserve the activists moving in and helping them?
Yeah, so that's a great point by John. So, look, the Trump phenomenon is real because you see it in the other state races at a much lower percentage than you see it in this race. The Wolfpack part of it is, with the volunteers, the money, makes a giant difference, and that's real. The other thing is, hey, vote the right way. So you know why? Because your constituents, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, don't like corruption. They actually do want free and fair elections. That polls at about 90%. The main thing that Wolfpack does is it just lets your constituents know that. They just let them know how you voted. And so if you voted for free and fair elections, great, that's wonderful. If you voted against that, well, now we know.
Yeah.
Okay, and finally, Senator Bob Duff from Democrat of Connecticut, he's the Connecticut Senate Majority Leader, says, we had a very good candidate who worked hard. We also had an energized base to get out the vote.
Yeah, it takes both.
It does indeed. And then Huffington Post ends with, turnout was much higher than anticipated for Connecticut's special election. In three towns, Washington, Roxbury, and Southbury, the polling locations ran out of ballots and had to tabulate votes by hand. See, that's what we do. Wolfpack gets out the vote. That's why we're on the ground. What do you need the 500 volunteers for? It's not some sort of big money operation that has any other ulterior motive. It is citizens who care about getting money out of politics, and they go and let the local folks know which way their representatives and senators voted.
Yeah.
And then those people go out and vote. You vote, you make a difference. Now, bottom line is, we didn't win the election, but we knew that going in that it was going to be a super hard fight. And part of the reason we picked this race was because we knew there was a 36-point deficit and that no one else was trying, really. So small local groups that had a little bit of an effect, bless their hearts, but we sent in an army over there. Because if it was a closer race, they could make excuses. Yeah. Oh, it was the Democrats would have won anyway. It was the Trump thing. It was this. It was that. But so now we've set a precedent, and in races that are not decided by more than 25 points, I bet we put together a track record that'll prove it out to you. Again, if you'd like to test it, have at it, Hoss. Just make sure you come correct.
Yeah, I hope somebody checked those hand tabulated votes in a race that was only 1,800 votes off. Let's make sure that that's secure. And also, and I said this it was less than a week ago. It feels like forever ago. When Tom Perez extremely narrowly beat Keith Ellison, like losing sucks, and in terms of power, it's everything, winning versus losing. But progress also matters. And if a race can turn 26 points in Connecticut in a matter of just 4 months, I mean, by my math, by December, if they ran it again, he'd get 300% of the vote. This progress matters, and simply because a snapshot of it doesn't show that you've won the battle just yet does not mean that you need to quit, that you need to throw in the towel. That could get flipped in the next race.
Super volunteer for Wolfpack, Stephen Garcia, said, Kama may have lost, but Wolfpack won, and because we sent a message. So come and send that message with us, wolf-pack.com. Be a volunteer like Stephen Garcia, like all the folks that were on the ground in Connecticut, the people who made the phone calls all across the country. Feel the power. It's amazing. And all, you know what was happening in the polls? Constituents were coming out because they had gotten the letters. They had gotten people that came and talked to them in their house. They had gotten the phone calls. Our volunteers were getting hugged at the voting booths. Like on the, you know, like, hey, they're honking in the streets and they're seeing them like, you're the Wolfpack guys, right? Now, the Republicans in this particular district did not give out hugs.
No, they did not.
Okay, but a lot of people appreciated it, and it's gratifying, and it's hard work, and you don't always get everything you want.
Yeah.
But there's great fervor in that fight, and there's great joy in that fight, and eventually fulfillment in that fight. So come join us, wolf-pack.com.
I heard unconfirmed reports that as people would hug, they'd lean in and whisper, Kava, gotta have a. Unconfirmed.
You know, I wonder what's going to happen to the political career of dear old Greg Kava.
I don't know. I wonder if, I mean, like there's probably academic studies on this, but I wonder if how many points can an election be swung by an absolutely horrible slogan? Like, can it be 10 points? I wonder.
Oh, by the way, you know, look, I don't know why we haven't talked about it in the past, but we haven't much about the other races. I've told you about one, and that was a long time ago, but it was Valancourt up in New Hampshire. He was a Republican who tabled our resolution, but we had no chance of beating him because he was a six-term incumbent that had been in office since the 1990s. I'm sorry, that's former Representative Valancourt. So we win 9 out of 10 times. So come join us, and it's fucking awesome when we win. So, all right, wolf-pack.com. You got it. Let's go on to Trump.
I hope we get to make that joke about a lot more politicians in the near future. Really, before we jump into the Trump, though, quick little updates. Don't have time to make full videos about these, but a couple things I wanted you to know about. This Monday, the Department of Labor once again pushed to delay the implementation of an Obama-era rule that required, and this is crazy, that financial advisors act in the best interests of their clients. They are still putting all the legal pressure they can on to stall that until they can eventually kill it. And so that's their little wet kiss to Wall Street right there. In addition, a new study shows that the risk of damaging earthquakes in Oklahoma is now as high as it is in California. After over the past couple of years, about 5 or 6 years, the number has shot up precipitously. It's at a certain point on the Richter scale. Back in the 80s, they had 2 that passed that threshold. A couple of years ago, they had 4,000. okay? And it turns out that it's closely mapped to fracking, hydraulic fracturing technology, and the rise in that. When the prices started to go down and they did less of the fracking, from 1 year to the next, the number of earthquakes dropped by 20%.
So
if we kill the fracking, we can save Oklahoma.
No, it's a wild coincidence. That's what Scott Pruitt assured me of when he was Attorney General of Oklahoma.
Exactly.
And was taking money from fracking companies and was telling us how great fracking is for the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah. And a little update on the rise of hate groups. We've been talking about the huge number of bomb threats against synagogues and Jewish community centers. Well, we just got one step closer to actual violence once again happening in a place like that. A window in a synagogue Sunday school classroom in Indiana was shot this week, and the FBI is now investigating it as a possible hate crime. And so one step closer to these anti-Semitic threats actually drawing blood, and it would have been children in this case, so that's wonderful. At the same time, in Montreal, a bomb threat was made against Muslim college students at a particular college there. An email was sent claiming responsibility by what appears to be an offshoot of a U.S.-based white supremacist organization. And in their email, they claimed that, quote, things have changed now that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. So that's wonderful. But don't worry, he's really presidential now, as of last night. So don't worry about the white supremacist organizations. But anyway, with that, why don't we jump into it?
Can I just say something really fast?
Yeah.
You guys are noticing these little quick John giving us the news moments. It should be like behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, we need a segment. I mean, what? Going the Johnny Pied Piper, or
I don't want that. I don't.
Or
let's never talk about it again.
Going, go to the John.
Oh,
with this
okay.
So, Jesus, going to the John, and then
here's some more shit.
Being his co-host, I will provide the. Okay.
We need a nice, you know, we need to round out this segment with something catchy.
One of our producers before the show, she said that they were cute. But it's the news. It's just faster. We're not rambling. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Right.
Lots of big news to get to. You jackals. Anyway.
Okay, the Pied Piper. Fine. We'll do it.
I don't want the... I'd prefer the John thing than the Pied Piper, if I'm being honest. Okay. Figures in the media on both the left and the right were nearly giddy, fawning in their praise for Donald Trump's performance last night. If you didn't see it, that performance was his ability to read a script without saying the words fake news or mocking a disabled reporter. To be fair, he also didn't grab a woman's crotch, but he usually tried to hide that anyway. He did, however, get through a speech that was given to him without saying anything that was on its face absurd. And so, as a result of that, lots of really good reactions to it. In fact, we've got polls. 57% who tuned into the speech said they had a very positive reaction to it. Nearly 7 in 10 said that his proposed policies would move the country in the right direction, even if those policies were vague or based on inaccurate facts. 7 in 10 said the speech made them feel more optimistic about the direction of the country, which long-term is probably exactly what he wants. And then there was the particular pundits. So that's the people. We've got the pundits, too. Let's bring up this tweet here. You're going to see there Gayle King saying, he said from the beginning he was going to speak from his heart, and I certainly think he did that.
Okay, I got to pause there.
Okay.
See, no. That I'm not going to allow. So I actually thought he performed well, partly based on the fact that he read the prompter better than he normally does. When he does read the prompter normally, he's very clunky, like, and they tell me that I'm supposed to say, right? And he didn't do that this time, and he read it fine, and
he didn't move his finger on the script like he does sometimes.
Yeah, and he didn't ramble with his, well, we're going to be winning bigly stuff, so okay.
Yeah.
But more importantly than that, I actually think it was a populist message, and I think substantively, of course, I disagree with 80% of it, but there's a solid 20% I actually agreed with. Rhetorically and politically, I thought he did a good job, and I said that immediately after the speech, and I think the numbers of people's reaction to it bear that out. You got to separate those two things.
Of course.
Is it true, and did it work? And I thought it worked, and it turns out it did.
Yeah.
But on Gayle King, no, I'm not going to allow that. Because
speaking from the heart.
Speaking from the... Look. That's the talking point that they gave all the anchors before the speech. This is, by the way, every president does it, every administration does it, okay? So the president tonight will speak from the heart. And I was flipping through the channels, and every anchor on every channel dutifully read the talking point given to them by the White House. Tonight he will speak from the heart. Don't read that. What does that mean, speak from the heart? That doesn't mean anything. He didn't even write the speech, and you know that. You know that there's a speechwriter. By the way, yeah, Obama had a speechwriter, Bush, Reagan, they all have speechwriters. But you know he's not speaking from the heart. That doesn't mean anything. And then for you to then come back after the speech and go, you know what? That talking point they gave was about him speaking from the heart. It was true. How would you know? How do you even know what's in his heart? Mm-hmm. It's a preposterous thing to say. See, that's the mainstream media being the old, super crappy mainstream media.
Yeah, exactly. The fawning, sort of shiver up the leg mainstream media of past years. And yeah, look, I'm going to read more of these in just a second. I'm not surprised that it worked. I didn't think that he would take this tact of a very carefully prepared, probably combination Stephen Miller, Steve Bannon produced speech. But of course that sort of speech is going to be popular. This is how you had the rise of political movements like in Italy and in Germany. You combine faux populism that will not actually deliver on its promises, but harkens back to a better economic time of the past, back in the golden ages, and you combine that with a healthy dose of we've got the xenophobic view of outsiders and the people coming in are stealing our culture. You combine those three things and people will support you. That's what humans are. We are monkeys and we want people who are going to protect us and tell us things are going to be better like they always were in the past, even if they weren't that great in the past. So some more pundits. Chris Wallace, who's been okay at times on Trump, but not always, saying, I thought it was by far the best speech I've ever heard Donald Trump give. It was one of the best speeches in that setting I've ever heard any president give.
No, come on,
Chris. Those are different
statements.
Might be the best speech Donald Trump has given.
No. The first sentence I totally agree with. That's exactly what I said last night. But remember, that's a low bar.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay. The second sentence is preposterous.
Yeah.
One of the best speeches given by a president to a joint session of Congress? Come on, Chris. Even you don't believe that. First of all, every Obama speech, every Clinton speech, and you know whether you're a Democrat or Republican, they're great orators. But also every Reagan speech, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. All three of those guys knocked it out of the park with speeches. And Trump is still reading the prompter. You can see it, right? I mean, he's gotten better with it. And it's still full of demagoguery and yada yada, and it's still clunky. It's the best he's ever given, but don't compare it to, and I'm no Reagan fan, but don't compare it to Reagan or Obama or Clinton.
Yeah, exactly, and I don't know why I don't have the polling results here, but they also compared the reception amongst the public to the first speeches given by past presidents, and Trump did very well, but it wasn't rated as well as Obama's first big speech to his joint address and all that, or George H.W. Bush as well. I don't remember the numbers for Clinton. So it was well received, but let's not go insane here, okay? Kirsten Powers said, best speech he's ever given, powerful, effective, inspiring at times, presidential. That's more justifiable than Chris Wallace's statement.
I think that's totally true. And let's go back to that for one quick second. Because as I was tweeting all night, I kept thinking that Capitol looks unfortunate. If you look at it real quick, it looks like another emoji. Okay, anyway, let's move forward.
I don't actually know which emoji you're talking about.
No, like, if you look at it super quick, I actually think it looks like the poop emoji.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay. That would be appropriate. But that's not presidential of you, Cenk.
No, that's right.
Okay, Rachel Maddow, I liked her. This is a balanced approach. She said this will be a very well-received speech for Donald Trump. I think it's fair to say it's a product of expectations that he's not seen as somebody who necessarily gives a good formal speech. It will be a notable thing that the president spent a big portion of what was an effective State of the Union telling the country what vicious, murdering criminals immigrants are.
Yes.
And that is very accurate there by Rachel
Maddow.
Right. Now, let's turn briefly to one of the reactions that got probably the most negative response on the internet. It's from Van Jones, very popular, I don't know if he qualifies as up and coming anymore because he's been around for a little while, but very popular commentator online, had this to say.
He became president of the United States in that moment, period. There are a lot of people who have a lot of reason to be frustrated with him, to be fearful of him, to be mad at him. But that was one of the most extraordinary moments you have ever seen in American politics, period. And he did something extraordinary. And for people who have been hoping that he would become unifying, hoping that he might find some way to become presidential, they should be happy with that moment. For people who have been hoping that maybe he would remain a divisive cartoon, which he often finds a way to do, they should begin to become a little bit worried tonight. Because that thing you just saw him do, if he finds a way to do that over and over again, he's going to be there for 8 years.
So a lot of criticism for that statement. He has responded to it today. not really addressing people's concerns. It seemed fawning. That's what it seemed like to me, at least initially. Now he's saying what he was trying to express was that people weren't taking Trump seriously enough. And there is, you can interpret what Van Jones said as people will say he became president tonight.
No,
people will see it as. If that's his message, fine. He should have gotten it across a little bit differently. But it sounded like he's saying, I have been won over. Which, of course, people don't like.
He doesn't mean
that. So mainstream media. Yeah. But that's what a lot of people took it as, and he got a torrent of criticism over that.
So let me agree and disagree in part and fervently. Okay. So the part I agree with is when Trump walked in, I tweeted this as I was watching it, I've never seen anyone more out of place anywhere than Trump giving a presidential speech to a joint session of Congress. He looked like he did not belong. It was like Mr. T was all of a sudden president. I'm like, what is this reality host guy doing as president when they say Mr. President and Donald Trump walks in? I'm like, oh my God.
Macho Camacho.
Yeah. What have we done? What if Randy Macho Man Savage or Macho Camacho or any of them, right? Yeah. Kim Kardashian walks in. So what have we done? But by the end, as he, you know, read the prompter fine and delivered his points fine, and I thought it was a fairly effective speech, especially for his base, I thought, well, he's president. So there is me agreeing with Van Jones. I think the essence of what Van Jones is saying.
That people will see it there.
Yeah. And it was the most presidential thing he's ever done. Mm-hmm. So he came in looking like the buffoon that I think he is. He walked out a little bit better than that, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Now, the part I fervently disagree with is Van Jones was specifically there referring to the what he did with the widow of Ryan Owens, who died in the Yemen raid. I think that was also effective because it was effective demagoguery.
Oh, we're going to get to that. Don't worry.
No, I know. But that's not. But that didn't make him presidential.
No.
That part made him a demagogue. And that was a cheap, emotional porn trick.
And that's something that we've seen many times. That's not new.
Yeah.
He was saying it's something new and different. No, we've seen presidents hide behind dead soldiers. We see that all the time.
I wouldn't have celebrated that moment. That moment was a particularly cheap and ugly moment.
Yeah.
So, in terms of whether you agree or disagree with Van Jones does not agree with Donald Trump. And it's perfectly okay to disagree with Van Jones' interpretation of that speech, right? So, but it doesn't mean that all of a sudden Van Jones is like, oh my God, I think Donald might be right.
Yeah.
No, nobody's saying
Although
that.
I think some of the media might be doing that. The line, I set this aside as I was reading it because I watched the highlights. I read the entire speech. The line, and it was a separate line that I found the most scary and most honest was when he said, a new national pride is sweeping across our nation. And we've been covering that recently. It is. I don't really like it.
And finally, let me just disagree with one last thing from Van Jones. He might be president for eight. Ain't no way, brother. Okay.
There's no way?
There's
no
way.
I'm more scared every day.
No, there's no way. I would be dramatically surprised if he finished 4 years. But there's no way he wins re-election. Okay. So, I mean, look, I'm going to say something too haughty, but not on our watch. Okay, it's just not going to happen, and we're going to be the part of the people who stop it. So I cannot.
We're going to be the cop that stops it.
Yes, I cannot conceive of an election that we lose to Donald Trump with progressives this mobilized. I cannot conceive of it.
I can think of some candidates.
No.
That's that can make Clinton look competent.
No. But that's what I'm saying, John, and that's why we're not going to have that conversation. There is no way on earth an establishment Democrat is going to win the 2020 primary. No way on earth, okay? Hear me now, quote me later, and I don't care how much crying the establishment does, we're never going to let an establishment Democrat run against Trump or Pence or whoever it is 4 years from now. Not going to happen, okay?
Okay.
You know, because part of that is being said because when you start saying Donald Trump's speech was this and that, and it was amazing, he's presidential now, it's based strictly on this one moment, which in Van Jones' case was a ridiculous moment, but he took it as a great moment. So it's based not in any kind of policy or any results that he's getting or not getting. So if we start focusing on results and policy, which we will, there's no way he can win. And focusing on results and policy with the primary, there's no way someone else who is empty can win.
Yeah.
That's if that happens. That's up to many people to hear it.
I wish that we had like an hour to talk about why the media did what they did last night, but we don't. So I'll try to be fast. The media, like a lot of Americans, loves to bow down to authority. They're looking for any excuse to do that, and especially when you wrap the authority up in a flag and you put the casket of a dead soldier behind it, they want to bow down to that. They like supporting the status quo. The reason they don't like Trump is because he seems scary and different, but as soon as he seems like past presidents, they will line up behind him. But there's a couple other reasons. One, they've been attacked as being unfair and biased against Trump, and so they are desperate for an opportunity to look fair, to look like they're doing what they normally do, and it's okay. And they want to go back to normal news. They don't want to have to be on the resistance watch for the next 4 years. They want to be like to just let that load come off their shoulders. And oh, we're just doing the news again. They want that. And so any sign that that might be happening, they're desperate for it right now.
I couldn't agree more with John. That's a point that maybe I have agreed with you most on in the entirety of the Young Turks' existence, because the press is looking for any opportunity to be quote unquote fair to Trump. So even Van Jones, I like him. I think he's a strong progressive, but he's got to prove to CNN that he can be fair. Okay, and so he I'm sure he doesn't consciously think it.
But it's in the background.
But in the back of your head, you're thinking, oh, this is a good moment. And by the way, again, with the context of I thought it was an effective speech, and if I was in this situation, I probably would have said something similar, but of course not what he actually said because of the parts
because
I disagreed
with. You agree
with
some of the substance of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But the Gayle Kings and all the other press, they're like, yes, oh, Trump, look, like a normal sellout president, establishment president, great, well, wonderful, yes, I get a check for fair, right? Yeah. So they're dying to do that. That was a huge part of what happened last night. And in fact, even the CNN producers, if you noticed, when Van Jones was talking, they started zooming in on him because they're like, this is a powerful moment.
And they tweeted out that individual moment. Yes, on the being fair, so a minute ago, Cenk promised you no establishment Democrat will win the primary. I will make you this promise. I will never be fair to Trump.
God bless
not gonna own. Happen. Okay, not on my watch. Anyway, are we taking our first break? We're a little bit over.
Yes, we haven't even.
Damn, that's blowing by.
We haven't even gotten to his lies yet, or his promiscuity. So you're not gonna want to miss that when we return. All right, back. Just back. Henry the Engineer writes in, the turnout for these special elections is so amazing. Everyone, brace yourselves. Here comes a mega knock. You know, I wear that shirt sometimes. We're the ones who knock on shoptyu.com, by the way. And in the case of OPEC, it's quite literal. And soon with the Justice Democrats, it will also be literal.
That's true.
Literally knocking on doors and telling folks the good message, if you will. Tensai Badger writes in, and that was a 26-point swing with TYT Live calling in the cavalry at the last minute. Watch out for the Young Turks, we're too strong. That's right. That's a great point. We did not have a lot of time to plan that. The special elections are super quick, so we had less than 3 weeks to get all those volunteers started. Next time, we'll have a lot more time. Watch out.
He might win too much next time.
Yeah, we're going to be winning so much, you're going to get tired of winning. Matthew,
be so proud.
Matthew Reed, I kind of mean it though. Matthew Reed writes in, when Trump talks about his election win in fake news, that is Trump speaking from his heart because it's about him.
Yeah.
Great point, Matthew. When he's talking about winning bigly and, you know, and it's the military's fault, not my fault, that's him speaking from his heart, not when he reads a fucking prompter. Larry G. Wonk says, Baby Donald earned a participation trophy for completing the longest teleprompter speech of his life.
I literally thought that earlier today. They love to talk about the participation trophies. That's what he got. He showed up, they gave him a trophy.
That's right. Shiroshi B says, Trump is the reason behind the Navy SEAL's death, so he became presidential for using his widow as a prop. Are you freaking kidding me? All right. Here on that. All right, $100 from Margie in Wisconsin for our journalism drive. Thank you. And Melody from California, $127. Thank you, guys. TYTnetwork.com/go. I was away for 1 day, and you guys murdered it. We're over 1.3. Once again, panic has set in.
Get out of here. You're killing our fundraising by being in studio.
Apparently so. So, guys, we got if we get to 1.5, I now have what appears to be an all-star crew ready to go. So they're not fully ready yet.
I don't even know.
No, you don't know. But when you know, you're going to be like, oh, damn.
But I know the person?
Oh, you're going to know them all. And
I'll know him? Or her.
We'll see, we'll see. And I shouldn't say all. I shouldn't
almost
say all.
Got him.
It's not all set. It's not all set. But there is some chance that once we announce it, you're going to say, damn, Daniel, you did it again. That's an old school.
We're going to hit you so hard with fundraising that we're going to knock you to memes from 2 years ago.
I think that meme was from like 8 months ago. What's
it feels there like was a long time iPad. Ago.
I think it was from like 8 months ago, but I just called it old school because that's how fast the internet moves.
It does move fast.
A meme from 8 months ago. What the hell? What, Grandpa, why are you still using that? All right, let's keep going.
Okay, a little bit more on the speech. Donald Trump's speech last night shockingly contained some statements that were not technically true. By one count, he made 61 verifiable statements, and 51 of them were untrue. We're not going to break down all 51. That's crazy. We were already going over. But we are going to break down some of them, and these are important ones, and they have clear policy implications for the near future. The first, the claim, Obamacare premiums nationwide have increased by double and triple digits. Obamacare is collapsing, and we must act decisively to protect all Americans. Now, it is true that premiums have gone up, but the idea that it's collapsing or that this is something to do with Obamacare, that is not true. The truth is, overall premium increases were actually faster, growing faster under President George W. Bush than under President Barack Obama, 99% under 8 years of Bush to just 59% under 8 years of Obama. So they were going up. They will likely always go up until the end of time, but they were not going up fast because of Obamacare, and Obamacare is not on the verge of collapse.
Okay. Well, it is because the Republicans are in charge, and they're going to collapse it by repealing it. The number one concern we had with Obamacare as progressives was that it did not have enough price controls. As usual, we were right. And by price controls, I don't mean to artificially limit it, but we left it completely in the hands of the private market and did not offer an option that could keep cost downs like a public option, which would create competition that would naturally, organically keep prices down. We were right about that. So, but that's not what conservatives were saying. Conservatives wanted to go in the opposite direction and empower private insurance to charge you even more. Now, that's what they did under Bush. That's why actually premiums went higher under Bush than they did under Obama. So the doubling and tripling is not true under Obama. The doubling is literally true under Bush when Republicans had their way and let private insurance do whatever the hell they wanted.
And many people suspected at the time that one of the chief motivations to destroy any sort of influence on price under the ACA when it was passed was so that a couple of years from now they could say, hey, look, the premiums have gone up. It's a very convenient little two birds, one stone situation. The next claim, Trump said, right now American companies are taxed at one of the highest rates anywhere in the world, which is a claim that I feel we have to knock down twice a month at this point. So, yes, if you look at the actual numbers on the books, American corporations have the third highest tax rate among Western countries. That is the on-the-books number. It is not the amount that they actually pay. When you factor in all of the different ways that they avoid their taxes, it is actually far, far lower than many other countries. But they don't want to talk about that. And they're going to, under his plan, by the way, cut corporate taxes down to about a third of what they're at right now.
So the loopholes allow some giant corporations to pay no taxes at all, some for up to a decade. Mm-hmm. Now, Trump would know a thing or two about avoiding taxes because he apparently avoided taxes for about, 18 years?
18 years, yeah.
Yes. And so he thinks paying 0%, not paying his fair share, is a great idea. He's now going to let not American companies, multinational corporations do that at a rate we haven't seen before. And the tax rate on the books is not anywhere near as important as the effective tax rate, the tax rate they actually pay. So that is and this is not just Trump. This is the oldest Republican trick in the book. They all say it, and they know that in essence it is grossly misleading. And they do it on purpose.
Yeah, and bear in mind that for many of these corporations, when you combine the fact that they can effectively knock their tax rate down to zero and they receive subsidies from the government, they can effectively make money. I should set up a corporation.
You know what that is, by the way? Crony capitalism.
It is. The next claim, this one having to do with immigration, which was a big focus of the speech. According to the National Academy of Sciences, our current immigration system costs American taxpayers many billions of dollars a year. Now, we don't know exactly what study he's referring to there, but there is information that comes from that academy that does say that there are costs to having immigrants. But that is simply one part of their final evaluation of the effect of immigrants, which does not support his argument. Their report, one of the reports found, that might be the one he's referring to, found that while first-generation immigrants are more expensive to governments than their native-born counterparts, primarily at the state and local level, their children are amongst the strongest economic and fiscal contributors in the population and actually provide a benefit monetarily to the local and state governments in which they live. We've talked about that previously. Anna Kasparian reported on that.
And by the way, for undocumented immigrants, one thing that's almost never talked about is that they pay into Social Security. They've got to do that in order to be able to get their paycheck. But since they're undocumented, they never get that money back.
Yes.
So that goes into Social Security, goes into Medicare that we benefit from, but they do not. So they also put in money that is just unaccounted for and comes back to us.
Yeah, I don't know if there's been enough talk about or study of if you were to, in Trump's wildest fantasies, kick more than 10 million undocumented immigrants out of the country, what effect that would have on the long-term viability of Social Security.
That's a great
question. It'd probably be devastating, and we should look into it. The next, Trump said this: we will provide massive tax relief for the middle class. Boy, have we ever heard a Republican president say that before? It turns out, and we don't know for sure, but based on information he's provided about his tax plan, the richest 1% would see an average tax cut of nearly $215,000 a year, while the middle one-fifth of the population would get a cut of just over $1,000. And if you are at the poorest tax bracket, you might end up paying more taxes under his plan than you do currently, which is madness.
Now, $1,000 is nice. First of all, it's going to explode our deficit. So all that talk about the debt and deficit, they never, ever meant it. Mm-hmm. But $1,000 is not massive. $215,000 is massive.
Exactly. And by the way, if you are in that group and you think that you might get that $1,000, you might think, well, hey, you know, I voted against Trump. Now I might get $1,000. That's pretty nice. Yeah, but they're going to take away your health care, which I guarantee is going to end up costing you more than $1,000. So this is not going to end up being a good bargain for most Americans. There was also this claim: 94 million Americans are out of the labor force, which might sound crazy, because it is. It's not true. The 94 million figure includes retirees, parents who are staying home to raise children, and high school and college students who are studying rather than working. It is made up. Those people are not looking for jobs. It makes no sense to cite them as being out of work. They're not trying to work. They're retired. They've already retired. They worked their whole life. But that number has been thrown around before.
Maybe he ended the sentence with sad baby. And in that case, he was being literal. There are 94 million babies out of work.
Exactly.
Why don't they get their, pull your diapers up and report to work.
Okay. Exactly. One other small claim, but it's the sort of thing that he makes these statements all the time about businesses, about jobs, and that certainly happened in this speech. He said, we've saved taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars by bringing down the price of the fantastic, and it is a fantastic, new F-35 jet fighter, and we'll be saving billions more dollars on contracts all across our government. He also referenced millions of jobs that will be coming in. In both of these cases, these are deals that were already going to happen before he won the election. They have nothing to do with Donald Trump. Lockheed Martin had been working with the government to get these cost downs for literally years now. It's still way overpriced and bloated, but the reductions that have been made have nothing to do with Donald Trump.
So as the economy rises, he says, see, I did that. Are you kidding me? You've barely been in office for a month. Obviously, those are economic forces that were put into effect by Obama. It's preposterous for you to claim that.
Yeah.
But when something goes wrong, like the Yemen raid, he goes, oh, it was Obama. Obama's the one who planned it. No, Obama purposely did not authorize it because he thought they weren't ready. You're the one who authorized it, even though they were apparently not ready.
Yeah, there's this manipulation of the stats. It's going to be great for him. So he's been saying for a year now that America is in the purge right now. It is a hellscape filled with criminals and murderers. It's not true. The numbers don't actually bear it out. And so that's a lie now, which might bother me, and it might bother you. But in a couple of years, it's actually going to work out perfectly for him because he can simply look at the accurate statistics and start talking about them. And it will look like, if you believed him the whole time, that he's gotten the crime rate down, but it was never up to begin with. It's actually a masterful political strategy.
Well, look, that's what he's, the only thing that he's good at, which is me, 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 and finding every excuse for why he's not wrong. So if there's something wrong, it was Obama. It's left over from Obama. If there's something going right, me, me, it was me. It was me, right? Mm-hmm. So you can do that trick all day long. The question is, are you ignorant enough to fall for it?
Now, in addition to the lies that Trump told in his speech, perhaps more damaging is the things that never even came up in it, that do come up in president's speeches, both Democrat and Republican. Whether they make much headway on these issues, they at least talk about them. He didn't, and we're going to have a nice, concise summary of some of the things that were not addressed by a face that you might recognize.
When you analyze a speech, sometimes what is more important is what somebody does not say as opposed to what they actually say. Some examples. I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about Social Security or Medicare. Even worse, President Trump has proposed a massive cut to Medicaid. Massive cut. I urge President Trump, keep your promises. Tell the American people, tweet to the American people that you will not cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. I did not hear President Trump tonight mention the words income and wealth inequality. Not only did President Trump not mention the issue of voter suppression, what Republican governors are doing all over this country to make it harder for people to participate in our democracy, but the truth of the matter is his administration is now working overtime with Republican governors to make it harder for young people, low-income people, senior citizens, and people of color to vote. That is an outrage. Perhaps most astoundingly, at a time when the scientific community is virtually unanimous in telling us that climate change is real, that it is caused by human activity, that it is already causing devastating problems in our country and all over the world, I did not hear President Trump say one word, not one word, about the need to combat climate change, the greatest environmental threat facing our planet.
Well, that's true. Huge threats.
Yeah.
Discussed.
I love that. A person who in the past was considered by cable news is like, oh yeah, that cranky old guy, maybe we'll have him on because it'll be, because we need somebody to make a progressive case at some point, I guess. Mm. If we can't get anybody else, let's get Bernie. And I know, I was in the building. That was the way that they thought about it. Now he's the standard bearer.
Yeah.
Okay, Trump speaks. Now let's hear what the other side has to say. Let's go to Bernie Sanders. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and look, we cover the forums. It's easy to say that they're just doing it for the money, which is probably the case, but they are doing it. And so we know that one of the things that hurt Bernie the most early on in the primary was that simply people weren't seeing him enough. And if they keep him on for the next few years, that's not going to be the case. His name recognition will be much higher going into the next election.
Yes, and I want to add one last thing to what Bernie Sanders said there. Look, when Trump falls, the Republicans will pretend that they were never with him. So let's be clear right now. They're completely with him. You saw it last night. Everything he said, standing applause, standing ovation, nonstop applause. And so when he doesn't talk about climate change, the Republicans love it. They hate climate change. It's not just Trump. Income inequality. Republicans have no plans to fight income inequality because they don't mind income inequality. They represent the rich. It's not just Trump. It's the entirety of the Republican Party. Yeah. So they've got to own it. So it's great to see Sanders making that point about Trump, but really it applies to the entire GOP.
Yeah, and people got to take note of some of the votes that are going on that are just ridiculous. The House Republicans voted to not have Trump release his taxes. Like, can you imagine going back 10 years and telling Republican congressmen, someday you're going to have to vote to protect the reputation of Donald Trump? But they're doing it, and they're on the record for that now. Okay, let's turn to one of the, I guess, highlights, not really, from the speech last night. One of the moments in last night's speech that I found most personally distasteful was Donald Trump's attempt to shield himself from legitimate criticism over the disastrous raid in Yemen from about a month ago by deflecting to the sacrifice and genuine tragedy of the loss of a life of a U.S. Navy SEAL. And in that pursuit, he enlisted the aid of the widow of that SEAL who was undergoing unbelievable grief right now, and he made a little moment out of it. You're going to see it in this clip.
We are blessed to be joined tonight by Corinne Owens, the widow of U.S. Navy Special Operator, Senior Chief William Ryan Owens. Ryan died as he lived, a warrior and a hero, battling against terrorism and securing our nation. I just spoke to our great General Mattis, just now, who reconfirmed that, and I quote, Ryan was a part of a highly successful raid that generated large amounts of vital intelligence that will lead to many more victories in the future against our enemy. Ryan's legacy is etched into eternity. Thank you. Thank you. And Ryan is looking down right now, you know that, and he's very happy because I think he just broke a record. For as the Bible teaches us, there is no greater act of love than to lay down one's life for one's friends. Ryan laid down his life for his friends, for his country, and for our freedom, and we will never forget Ryan.
Okay, let's break down all the loathsome parts of that demagoguery. Okay, so first of all, he's been getting flack because inside sources in the government and Defense Department saying, we really didn't get much intelligence from that raid. Basically a complete failure. So he says there, no, it's okay, my defense secretary reconfirmed that it was successful. He's your defense secretary. That doesn't count. It's not like he was going to come out and go, no, yeah, Trump botched it. That's not an outside source, right?
And that he was going to go rogue.
Yeah. And come on, man. To say he broke a record for the amount of ovation that he got.
It's the ratings thing.
Yeah, it
it's
is.
It's all TV. But before that's, I don't know which is worse. He's happy because of the number of moments. And it was long applause. And of course, like no human, or at least no lib, can look at that woman and not feel just incredible grief. I mean, if you've ever lost someone, you know at least something like what she's going through, and it's absolutely devastating. But before that, to say he spoke for the dead soldier's soul and said what that dead soldier is thinking about something as trivial as applause, that's sickening.
That he broke a record for longest applause, which, of course, there's no such record. And
I don't care. Anyway.
And he died. He died. And that's her husband. He died. So, but in his ratings-obsessed mind, he's like, ooh, that was a good one. That was long applause. I mean, sure, for Ryan, right? And then the Bible teaches us, don't quote the Bible. Everybody knows that you're the least religious person. Even when you're taking pictures with evangelical leaders like Jerry Falwell, you forgot to take the Playboy cover featuring you off the wall so it's in the picture. Don't quote the Bible. Everybody knows you're full of crap, okay? And then when he does quote the Bible, he talks about sacrifice and how it's the greatest thing ever. Then where were you in Vietnam?
Yeah.
5 deferments. If you were, why didn't you quote the Bible back then and jump into the fray? Why weren't you brave? Why didn't you make the best thing you could possibly do according to the Bible?
Yeah.
Not only did he get deferments while he was in college, afterwards he got a phony letter from his daddy's doctor saying he had bone spurs. When questioned which foot he had bone spurs on, he said, I can't remember, maybe both.
Rich conservatives have a lot of bone spurs.
But now when he was running for president many years later, another phony doctor says he's the healthiest guy who's ever run for president. So which one is it?
He's got the most virile bone spurs in the land. And this comes a day after he said, hey, don't look at me, I had nothing to do with this, it was Obama. Obama did it. Or if not Obama, it was the generals. It was the generals did it. And he can't take any responsibility. We know that he apparently pushed this thing through that Obama had decided not to greenlight because he wanted to make some sort of move in terms of terrorism. He did it over dinner. He wasn't in the Situation Room when it was going on. He didn't care about this man's sacrifice when he was being sacrificed. And then, of course... What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, he chose his wife to be there because the dad wouldn't come. So the dad of Ryan Owens said, don't use my son as an excuse to impede an investigation.
Yeah, don't hide behind him.
Don't hide behind him. And then after his dad said that, he went and hid behind him and his widow.
In the most public way imaginable.
He's really a gross guy. I mean, if you're a veteran and you saw that he, because he's rich, he got a, you know what he said after he didn't go to Vietnam and laughed about it? He said, no, the sex parties I used to attend at the time and avoiding STDs at those parties was my own personal Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So that's what he said.
Soldiers.
Okay. And now he hides behind this widow. It's grotesque.
And then quick two other things, reasons why this was incredibly grotesque. I mean, one, it's, okay, it's obviously service members who've lost their life. We have to remember them, remember their sacrifice because they did sacrifice that. But of course, he made no mention of the 30 civilians who died, the children who died. So of course, because they're foreigners, they don't matter. They don't merit, you know, a response. It doesn't matter if they were collateral damage, if it could have been avoided. Don't even talk about them. Hide their deaths as we always do. And to be fair, as Republicans and Democratic presidents do as well. But then, like, people don't seem to get. And this was the problem I had with Van Jones' statement. I understand he was sort of speaking from the point of view of a Trump supporter. But this hiding behind dead soldiers produces this perverse incentive where if you have a mission, you should hope as president that soldiers die because then you're above criticism. And just the glorification of the military, venerating that and these missions above anything else, it's one of the worst strains of American politics. And to see it in the first month even, this does not bode well for future speeches from Trump. He now knows, if I can hide behind the flag, if I can hide behind dead soldiers, I'm going to be insulated from criticism, and that is a dangerous thing for a man as self-involved and narcissistic as Donald Trump to realize.
And he promised, and I think this is why he did it, that we're going to start winning now with the military. Mm-hmm. So now, you don't win by being careless, but in his mind, you do. You're just aggressive. Just go, who cares? Yeah. Who cares? I got to get the entree. Go. I approved a mission. Obama's weak. He's not winning. We got to use the military more. But what happened at the end? They were trying to get the leader of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. Not only did they not get him, he mocked Donald Trump on Twitter afterwards. Ha ha, you didn't get me, you loser. It turns out they didn't even get valuable intelligence. They ran into a huge firefight. They killed all those civilians, and we lost Ryan Owens. And the guys who claimed that losing... four people in Benghazi, including a couple of our troops, right? Mm. Was the worst thing ever had to happen. Benghazi! Losing troops is a crime against everything we've ever known, and people should go to jail over it. Now they're like, they brag. Oh, we lost a troop. Yeah. We lost a Navy SEAL. You should give us credit. No, I don't give you credit, and that isn't winning, you schmuck.
Yeah. We're a little bit over.
We got to do the... Oh, shit, we didn't even do ISIS.
No, we didn't do ISIS or the EPA.
Oh,
I mean, there is also tomorrow. We can do a roundup. Actually, by tomorrow, we might have more information about some more of the environmental executive orders.
Okay, let's save the EPA, but let's do ISIS.
Okay. Donald Trump once again promised last night during his big address that ISIS's days are numbered. You're going to see it in this clip.
As promised, I directed the Department of Defense to develop a plan to demolish and destroy ISIS, a network of lawless savages that have slaughtered Muslims and Christians and men and women and children of all faiths and all beliefs. We will work with our allies, including our friends and allies in the Muslim world, to extinguish this vile enemy from our planet.
Okay. Great. Well, he's on the record. He's going to extinguish them. He's not going to, you know, further their progress. He's not going to have them backpedaling. He's going to extinguish them. Gone from the face of the earth. So it's an interesting promise. Well, first of all, I hope he's right. That would be wonderful. So let's just keep a count on it and see how it's going. Okay. So far, not a big deal. One day on Trump's promiscuity, we're one day in counting. And we will continue to count and see how long it takes him to extinguish ISIS from the planet. Because I didn't say that. Obama didn't say that. Trump just promised it to you.
All of them.
Because
all of them.
Because he knows how to win, and he knows how to do it. So, and he you guys believe him, right? He tells it like it is. Mm-hmm. He tells it like it is, right, Trump voters? So let's see if he told it like it was. Let's see if he can actually extinguish ISIS. All right, day one, the count begins.
Yeah, and I think that we deserve a lot of credit here because we are being unnecessarily fair to Donald Trump. I've made a public pledge never to be fair to him, but we're being unfortunately fair to him today because he said all throughout the campaign he is going to destroy ISIS so fast it'll make your head spin. He's going to wipe them off the face of the earth. It's incredibly easy. He knows how to do it. He has a secret plan. Obama doesn't know how to do it. The generals don't know how to do it. That was back when he was insulting the generals. Now the generals are the best thing in the world now that he's president. And he said he'd wipe them out. We gave him the first month free. We're not even counting that on our little ticker. But we'll see if he's able to do it. And what's odd is that it's taken a day. Because it might seem, oh, you know, really hard to defeat ISIS if you're a realistic thinker who understands the severity of the threat. But he already did last night at the speech what we were assured as libs was the only thing necessary to wipe out ISIS. And you're going to see that in this video.
We are also taking strong measures to protect our nation from radical Islamic terrorism. According to data provided by the Department of Justice, the vast majority of individuals convicted of terrorism and terrorism-related offenses since 9/11 came here from outside of our country.
We were told the only thing you need to do to destroy ISIS is to name it. Call it what it is. Radical Islamic terrorism. And it's been a day?
And it's still here. What's going on? Well, I thought it was going to vanish.
There's something. We're going to look into it. We're going to send our reporters because clearly the people who said that weren't simplistic thinkers who are so overwhelmed by their own Islamophobia that they've completely caricatured the fight against terrorism. It's clearly not that. So we're going to look into it. Maybe ISIS has been destroyed. But we will be keeping up. We'll give you periodic updates to that count as well.
Just name him. He did. No, there. Okay, hold on. Okay, it has been named radical Islamic terrorism. Okay, gone. Not just by us, by others, but the president. I was told
he did it in Congress.
I was told for almost 8 years that all you got to do is for the president just to magically say it, and if you name him, have the courage to name it, it will disappear. Okay, day one of day one and counting of whether radical Islamic terrorism is wiped off the face of the earth by simply naming it.
Yeah. What's your over-under?
Now, look, on ISIS, they actually have been reeling again before Trump took office. Mm-hmm. They lost Kobani, which was a huge fight. They've lost several towns, and now there's an offensive by the Iraqi army in Iraq that was planned for months and months and months. Mm-hmm. And if they retake Mosul, the Iraqi army does. You know what Trump's going to do. It was me. I retook Mosul. Okay, I would love that. Hey, go to Mosul. Let's see how that turns out.
Yeah.
Anyway, even so, you think that he's going to just take out all of ISIS from all of Syria and all of Iraq? So don't get deluded when a plan that the Iraqi army has been working on for over a year, yes, with the help of U.S. military, yes, under Obama, if they retake one town, you don't get to declare mission accomplished.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and look, obviously we're joking and everything. If it happens, I'll even give it to him. I'll apologize for the joke and be happy that the people of this region no longer have to suffer under ISIS. Because, of course, the people being hurt by ISIS, 99.99% of them are not American citizens. We want it to be done. We just understand that his strategy has nothing to do with defeating ISIS. His rhetoric, we know, feeds recruitment for ISIS. His strategy will turn more of the citizens of these countries against us. And it seems to be, based on his rhetoric, much more about getting in there and stealing their natural resources, which we've seen that before from past presidents, than anything having to do with genuinely fighting international terrorism.
Look, al-Qaeda has been greatly diminished, but they still have the al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula. They still have al-Nusra in Syria, and the Zawahiri is still out there. So these things are not easy to get rid of.
Yeah.
So ISIS will be extremely difficult. But even if you greatly diminish ISIS, radical Islamic terrorism is an idea. You can't just bomb it. You have to be smarter about how you fight it, and you fight it with ideas. And Trump is not capable of that. No. So it's one thing to say he's going to extinguish ISIS, which is preposterous. But to say that he can get rid of radical Islamic terrorism is just insanity. That's not how it works.
It doesn't mean anything.
And it not only does it defy logic, it's not a thing that can, like, you can diminish it, right? Mm-hmm. You could fight back. But he just thinks, oh, that's okay, I just do more raids in Yemen, and then that's it. And I'm winning by losing, you know, and it's okay. And then soon they'll just come in and go, we're not radical anymore, you wouldn't, Mr. Trump.
God, we used to be so radical. Thank God we've changed.
Could you imagine? Al-Baghdadi, the leader of ISIS, comes in. No, Mr. Trump, you are very right. I beg for forgiveness, okay? I don't know what I was thinking, being radical, okay? No. I have given all that up, okay?
I have discovered Super Nintendo and Mike's Hard Lemonade. Yes. I like this lifestyle much better.
No, you are right. Capitalism is right. I build Al-Baghdadi Tower right away. Which, by the way, he does believe in capitalism, because remember the one time he was in public giving a sermon? He had the Rolex.
Yeah, exactly.
There is something that does unite demagogues.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys.
Hope he actually kills ISIS.
Okay.
It's not going to happen.
Yes. Of course. Of course we want it to happen. Okay. So let's take a quick break here. Thank you, John. Everybody check out youtube.com/thinktank. And we got a big show ahead for you guys. Not only hour two coming up, but later today for the members, you will be seeing two live interviews. I've got a new nickname. You know what? Okay, I will reveal. It's a good one. It's a good one. It came out organically, okay?
Of who?
Of me. Well, I have a new nickname, and this one is a doozy.
Is it Piper?
No, but that's a good one for you.
It's not, though. It's not.
Okay, in the post game for the members, you will, and the members get the interviews live. You're the only ones who get it live. You got Old School Tonight. That's also for the members. TYTnetwork.com/join. And then in the post game, I will tell you my new super cool nickname. Okay, so come right back for hour two.